It happened. There's no blame. You're in a mess and you need to get out of it.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, episode 5, Unwed Father. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Again With This. Thank you so much for your support, Patreon supporters. We really appreciate it. How are we showing it? Not very well. Tara made me watch What Death Leaves Behind, which obviously is a poop emoji, / the kidney, I thought that I would avenge myself with an equally terrible property starring Brian Austin Green. When I picked this 1997 TV movie, it absolutely was with vengeance on my mind for making me watch that Vincent Young mess last time. To say that it has boomeranged on me is to understate the case rather dramatically. But I'm going to take my punishment. We will get through this together. Here is the brief. Brian Austin Green plays Jason, a quote-unquote rocker, LOL, and college student who gets teenage Melanie, who is played by Nicole Tom. That name sounds familiar. It's because she played Sue Scanlon on Beverly Hills 90210. And yes, watching them make out is the weird. He gets Melanie pregnant during a one-night stand. How does this happen in this day and age? Well, it's TV. Also, Dave, please play clip one.
Jason, do you have a...
Shh. It's okay. My dick won't reach. How is it okay? You'd think even a middle schooler wouldn't go for that shit. But then again, the Teen Mom franchise is thriving, as I sadly can report. Anyhow, because Melanie and Jason exchanged fluids, but not last names, again, no judgments, she has trouble tracking him down, but outside one of his band's gigs, LOL, where they've just been talking about cutting their demo CD, a list of OLs, Melanie is thrilled to learn that Jason plans to be supportive and involved. A million JKs, he is full of judgment for her decisions in clip two.
And you're absolutely sure it's mine? I'm just asking.
Well, it couldn't be anybody else's.
Look, I don't mean to be rude, okay? But you weren't exactly a virgin. I mean, I knew you for 10 minutes and you were all over me. You can't possibly expect me to believe that that never happened with any other guys.
Look, you don't know anything about me.
Well, we know something about Jason, namely that he's a douche. Melanie is unable to bring herself to terminate the pregnancy, but a year later, she finds herself utterly overwhelmed between the fact that the wee baby Sean has colic and her own mother's toxic disapproval and annoyance. Clip three.
Are you ever going to forgive me? I've made a huge mistake. I have ruined my life. Isn't that bad enough?
You want to know something? Yours isn't the only life that's ruined, okay? You were the one thing in my life that I was proud of. The one thing! I don't even have that anymore.
Well, I'll get an apartment as soon as I go back to work.
Oh, really? Who's going to care for Sean?
I will! Oh, great. Now I woke him up.
Well, at least he's a boy. He won't get knocked up and expect you to pick up the pieces.
What do you want me to do? Move out of the street? Slit my wrist?
Why didn't you just put him up for adoption?
Why didn't you do that with me?
The backstory here, such as it is that Melanie's mother had Melanie when she was 15, and there's a lot of angst oft referred to, not terribly well rendered about that. Tara, you called for that clip. Do you want to talk about it?
We can get into it after we finish the rundown. I do have much to say about it, though.
I am sure. Melanie sees no other option but to track Jason down and leave the wee baby Sean with him. Jason bears up well, except he's predictably actually a graceless fuck about it and tries to give Sean away about 7 different ways from Sunday himself, only to get stymied by the foster system, the adoption system, and, you know, having denied paternity previously. But because you've seen a movie before, you know that with no other choice, he ends up bonding with Sean and becoming a half-decent parent, only for Melanie to reappear and assert her parental rights once she's got her head back on straight, at which time Unwed Father kind of turns into a men's rights propaganda film starring, we will never fucking tire of reminding you, a future deadbeat who named one of his own children Cassius with a K. Clip 4.
Look, I'll take this to family court if I have to.
Oh, really? Excuse me, but who in their right mind would let you have custody, huh? Let's not forget, you abandoned your baby.
You abandoned us both when I told you I was pregnant.
Oh, it's hardly the same thing.
Look, I'm his sole legal parent. You're not even on the birth certificate.
I took a paternity test.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why'd you do that? Cut me stone dead when I asked you to.
I wanted to know, that's all.
Oh, is that all?
Look, I have positive proof he's my son, all right? We were tested. Where the hell were you, huh? What, you called twice in 6 months and hung up both times? Nah, I was with him every day. I'm the one who changed him. I'm the one who fed him. I was the one who took him to the hospital when he was...
Why was he in the hospital?
You see, you don't even know that.
Well, is he okay?
Yeah, he could have died for all you were involved with him. What possibly makes you think you have any claim left, huh?
I'm his mother.
No, not anymore. You're the woman who gave him away, remember?
But after much heartfelt exposition and an attempted escape with his son, Jason, quote, does what's right and settles for getting his name on the birth certificate, 2 weekends a month, quote, joint custody, and a plucky guitar soundtrack at the park, letting us know via establishing crane shot that Sean is loved by both his parents. In that last clip, you hear every reason why Brian Austin Green should not have a career. I seem to recall that he was pretty good in the Sarah Connor Chronicles, but his inability to avoid throwing in a bunch of extremely hostile looks and irates when his character is supposed to be emotional. Plus, there's the usual XXXXL wardrobe and offended flapping. I don't know what this movie wants from me emotionally, and it can't be to want to murder Jason, but that's the result.
Yeah.
Everyone in this movie except Melanie's friend, who sort of like gets macked on by Jason at the end and then is like, I don't really want to be a stepmom. Everyone in this movie is a shit brick.
Yeah.
Everyone. I'm sorry I made us watch this.
Well,
please flagellate me. Thank you.
No, I did not intend to start an arms race with these topics. So let us just agree in front of these witnesses in the audience to virtually shake on a non-aggression treaty going forward. But yeah,
or like pick one that looks fun in a like horrible in a fun way, like Friends Till the End instead of something like this, which is like, wow. How did we get here?
Well, but that said, fucked up politics aside, as you mentioned, Unwed Father is about 100 times more watchable than What Death Leaves Behind. Like, it does seem like someone with a competent sense of story put it together. You know what I mean?
Like it was made by people who have watched stories before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for one thing, one of the things I can say that is positive about it, and this goes back to the clip that I called for, is I feel like it accurately depicts the hell, not just of under-resourced, unplanned teen parenthood, but all parenthood, which is to say, how do you listen to that clip of Melanie's mother, Tess, who is played by Isabella Hoffman from Homicide, traumatizing her by telling her the truth about everything she gave up to have Melanie and not think, why does anyone have a child? Because honestly, why does anyone have a child? Parenthood remains humanity's biggest scam for, you know.
It really is. And I will give the production credit. They did an extremely effective job with the sound design. First of all, there's a few wee baby Sean's. The middle one is extremely cute.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound of that particular colicky baby crying, and when you get to that last, like, and then he takes a lungful, like,
yeah.
All of us with much younger siblings are like, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah.
They really do a good job using the crying to ratchet up the tension.
Yeah.
In scenes, I was just like, someone go pick up the fucking kid.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. So Jason is living with his father, who's played by Alan Rachins. I don't know how to say his last name. R-A-C-H-I-N-S.
I don't either.
Douglas Brackman from L.A. Law in a beautiful toupee. I mean, it's really just almost believable. And he's rich. Yeah. He lives in this giant house. He has a huge like car dealership, and Jason's mother is dead, and his dad has remarried this woman named Lillian. And at a certain point, they're both up in the middle of the night because the baby is crying and Jason doesn't know how to get it to, shut up, calm down. Either way, same result. And, you know, we're supposed to think like she's a monster because she has no empathy for Jason's travails. And she's like, look, I did not sign up for this. But you know what? She didn't sign up for this. Like, she didn't marry this guy thinking there was going to be a baby in his house.
Yeah, true.
Anyway.
There's also some like depths hinted at with references to how much Jason Sr. has let Jason get away with because his mother died. And it's like, well, let's see that fight. And if that's why Jason is such an entitled little fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Versus it just being Brian Austin Green playing every single character except in the Cocoa Krispies commercial as an entitled little fuck.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say they do some subtler stuff with the two of them, especially like when they go to the DNA lab and the guy is like, well, it's going to take 4 weeks. And Jason's dad is like, come on, work with me here. Cause he's a car salesman. It's just like he defaults to that mode and the lab test guy's like, it's 4 weeks. Like I can't do anything. But then, you know, later Jason is trying to get Tess to do him a favor and, you know, walks into the house. She's previously said she thinks he's bullshit and is of course correct. But he just like reflexively flirts with her like, I can't believe you're Melanie's mother. You could be her sister. Your hair looks so good like that. And she's like, cut the shit. It's like just like how they've given them both that sort of salesman-y manner. You know, I appreciate that care given to their crappy characters because it rang true to me.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things in here that are like... He's still just walking around with the baby held like it's a, I don't know, loaf of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Like weeks, it's supposed to be. Like they've moved up to the next size of set of twins playing the kid.
Yeah.
And it's like, get a snuggly, get a scarf, anything. Put him in your giant shirt. There's room. I mean, that's annoying. The fact that, but... At the same time, the fact that he is just ignorant about just basics of what you're supposed to do with a kid.
Yeah.
It's perfect that he just like drives around until he finds a building that says foster system on it.
Right.
And is like, and then he literally is like, well, isn't there somewhere I could leave him in a basket?
Yeah.
And the woman's like, actually trying to work with this stunad based on this. I don't like, there are moments in it where it's like everyone's hateful, but this is also like the reality of some people just not being able to be human beings.
Yes.
To each other.
Well, yes. And part of his journey is from like guy who doesn't know that when you're moving into your houseboat, you can't just put a stack of boxes on a dolly and then put your child in the car seat on top of that and roll it along. To guy who notices when a coffee cup is put too close to the baby and like moves it before the baby burns his hand. So, you know, whatever, he learns. Meanwhile, Melanie, oof. So she is established as someone who can draw. And we see early on, like when she goes to the first show and sees Jason, she's drawing a picture of him and her friend Gina, who's played by the actor who played Emma from Kate and Allie, looks at the drawing and is like, ooh, it looks just like him. And then they show it and it doesn't have a face, which is like, okay, someone didn't care.
But that's really funny.
She has in one scene when it's the two of them at the, you know, pizza place where they work, Melanie has like this weird towny accent from, you know, Mystic Pizza, even though they're clearly somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. And later is still drawing because she, when she flees, she goes to live with another friend of theirs in L.A. and just audits a couple of figure drawing classes and draws her friend sitting on, you know, a rock or whatever thing that they've put her on for this class. But except what Melanie has drawn is Sean's giant head that her friend is sitting on. And it's so creepy. Like, it's supposed to be, a, you know,
weird.
Obviously.
And then there's like tentacles involved. Yeah, it was yeah
creepy. But yeah, the other element of Jason's growth, I forgot to say this before, is that he meets another sexy broad at a party, and it's a repeat of his assignation with Melanie, except this time he's like, oh no, I don't have a condom, and she's the one who's like, it's fine, as if we're supposed to think this woman played by Emmanuel Shrieky is not going to say like, oh, it's fine, I'm on the pill or whatever. Like, she's just like, oh no, I can't get pregnant. Like, it's never occurred to this 20 something woman that this is something she could be concerned about. Like, it's, you know, the world of this movie is very strange and unknown to me.
Well, and then, you know, Melanie like hands him the baby and all the baby stuff and is like, well, bye. And then, the movie is content to let us think that she is literally just kind of driving around between wherever they're supposed to be, Portland.
Yeah.
And LA just for like weeks or like a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then she doesn't appear to have a job. And then she comes back and she's like, well, I'm back. And he's like, well, fuck off. And it's like, okay, this is maybe where you should like start the story, in my opinion. Not if you're going to go in this like men's rights directions, like, you know, these bitches in their moods, fuck her. Like,
yeah.
And there's definitely the sense, partly this is just Green's quote acting, that he expects to be thrown a parade for doing what single moms have done and are still doing all over the world every day.
Yeah.
That he's like, you don't even know. You don't know his pediatrician, like, would you? You don't care.
Yeah.
And then the minute he's like, do I want to go to court? Actually, I think I'll be good with 2 weekends a month. Like, okay, Ronan.
Yeah. Also, just, to any.
Yeah, I just. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say to anyone hoping that they would watch this and because they've heard that he's in a band. Get some sequels or some new bangers on the on the order of Switch It Up. It's immediately apparent right from the first moments of the movie that even though Jason's in a band, Jason sings, we all know Brian Austin Green can sing. We know what his singing voice sounds like. Definitely not him singing in any of the songs that we see at all, which is weird.
The one time it does sound kind of like him, it's a really off note too. That one wonders why that was left in. Perhaps someone is a tad difficult on the set.
Yeah, perhaps.
Also, his hair is ridiculous.
Yeah, the hair. I was watching it, being like, "Was this his big character choice?" Because it doesn't look like any iteration of David Silver hair at all.
Yeah.
Well. This was an experience.
It was.
It was definitely better than what Death Leaves Behind. So thank you, I guess. I don't know when else I would have watched it.
Regrets.
Yeah. So Unwed Father, look it up. It's on Vimeo. We'll put it in the show notes.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This. Let's watch Shannon Doherty in Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And now here are your hosts, Tori Ariano and Tori Babag.
Hello. Patreons, thank you so much for your support and for being with us here today. We know what you're thinking. Girls just want to have fun. Should be a Patreon episode for a podcast about Sex and the City or Mad About You or The Single Guy. And yes, it obviously should. But amid all the actors you remember playing dance-obsessed Chicago teens, there was also an actor you know playing a Chicago preteen. And she is the reason that we are discussing this iconic entry into the annals of dance films today. Before we get into the details, there are two extremely important Shannon Doherty vehicles on Hulu and Prime right now, Girls Just Want to Have Fun and Heathers. So I threw it to my co-host to choose which one we were going to discuss today. This was her answer immediately. So Sarah, why was this such a clear choice for you?
Well, I mean, I've seen Heathers a million times. I own Heathers. I can and do recite lines of dialogue from it all the time. But I thought that we should go a bit off the beaten path because this, I think fewer people know about this movie, but this is one of those movies that HBO got the rights to and reran endlessly for a period of like 3 to 4 months back in the 80s. As a result, I conservatively have seen this 25 times, but I had not seen it probably in 30 years. So, I mean, there is a reason that I watched all of Sex and the City and both the movies, even though the character of Carrie Bradshaw was frequently so repellent that it made me want to quit. And it was because occasionally there was a glimmer of Janie from this movie who is like, she is so natural and charming in ways that you would not expect from 80s movies. And there is a lot of that also in her love interest's family, which includes Shannon Doherty, who gives a very sweet, un-Brenda-y performance. And yeah, like this movie is just like, there's not much to it. A lot of it is predictable. The doubling is so obvious.
Yeah. It's
like cringingly obvious, but it is efficient. It is winning. And yeah, I just wanted to go back to it and see if it held up. I was a little concerned that it wouldn't, but it does. All the things I used to like about it, I still like about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Efficient is right. It's under 90 minutes. That's including like the credits.
Yeah. Yeah.
it doesn't take a lot of your time. So the plot, and please picture that word in 500 sets of air quotes. Janie Glenn, as Sarah said, played by Sarah Jessica Parker, is an army brat who has moved a ton during her father's career. Now he has retired and they've ended up in Chicago, which she is psyched about because it's where they film Dance TV, the American Bandstand meets Friday Night Videos meets MTV News show that she is obsessed with. When she mentions this in her self-intro in homeroom at her new school, fellow DTV fan Lynn Stone, Helen Hunt, determines that Janie might be worth befriending. Very conveniently, the show announces on Janie's very first day of school that they're holding auditions for a new couple to join their in-house dancers. Janie defies her strict dad to go, gets paired up with a boy named Jeff Moline, Lee Montgomery, and gets through to the finals, infuriating Natalie, Holly Gagne, a spoiled girl who's trying to get her father to buy her a win and is also in the finals. After many choreography learning montages, a country club riot, and a scene in which SJP just stands around in her underpants with her preteen brother for literally no reason, the contest comes down to a tie that must be resolved with a dance-off between Natalie and her partner and, of course, our heroes, which they win, convincing Janie's raging dad that he should take her dancing talent seriously. Where is Shannon Doherty in all this? She plays Jeff's little sister Maggie, who maybe has a crush on the neighbor kid Drew, played by Jonathan Silverman. So I also want to note before we dig in that this movie was written by Amy Spies, who would go on to be a writer on both Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place.
Oh.
Here are the 90210 episodes that she wrote. Every Dream Has Its Price Tag, where Tiffany shoplifts and blames Brenda.
Okay.
Never saw her again. The 17-Year Itch.
Oh.
Cindy's Emotional
so
Affair.
Absentee.
So Absentee. One Man and a Baby, Brandon Dates a Teen Mom. Stand Up and Deliver. These performance-oriented coffee houses are really happening. And Home Again, the season one finale, where Andrea and Brandon almost do sex. And on Melrose, she wrote, For Love or Money, Zach Galligan from Gremlins steals Allison's sunscreen ideas, and Jake's ex has so much coke. polluted affairs in which Allison meets Keith. And three's a crowd where Amanda invites Allison and Billy to her dad's weird lake house on a fucking rock quarry or something. And Amanda and Billy start flirting, which is truly a resume to retire on. And maybe she should have, because she then worked on six other shows, which were called The Juice Box in Two-ition with a number two, My Alibi, My Date, Love Vampires, and Electric Spoofaloo, that I had literally never heard of. So I dug a little deeper. They all seem to have been on Take 180, a Disney-owned platform featuring shows made with audience participation. Ooh. My Alibi starred Alison Brie as a high school student while she was on Mad Men, as well as Gabrielle Carteris as, like, the school principal.
Okay.
Love Vampires co-starred William Maypother from In the Bedroom and from being Tom Cruise's cousin, and also that guy Ross Marquand, who was on The Walking Dead and is really good at impressions. Electric Spoofaloo featured Shane Dawson. Sarah?
Oh! Boo!
So it's before The Chair and before he had been canceled for like 5,000 different, all very valid reasons. So the same names kept coming up on the cast list. It seemed like they had a repertory company of cute teens and just cycled them in and out for as long as this thing lasted, which seems to have been from 2008 to 2009. So just a hot second for Take 180. Anyway, let's move on. The movie. I have a number of areas of discussion I wanted to get into, closing out with Shannon Doherty. So let's start with a story, which is every dance movie, and I loved it. You've got your hot guy, nerdy girl pair, your strict dad, little class disparity, and a dance contest. This is like really the formula for basically all of the step-up movies also. Like, it's a formula because it works.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like very comforting.
I wouldn't say that this is necessarily the prototype. I mean, I guess Footloose got there first, and there's a lot of commonality there as well. But, you know, there's a reason that these themes keep coming up in dance movies, and it's because they work, you know?
Yeah. And also, you get to put the teens in tight clothes.
Mm-hmm. All right, Natalie, as a villainess, not really that bad, I thought.
I mean, I think that at the time, like for the demo, which we are not, because we are fossils. Although I did enjoy, there was like a reference to a Walkman and a tab that I was like, oh, my people. Was it a sport Walkman? We're friends.
Mm-hmm.
For that, for the demo, I think she was perfect. Mm-hmm. She's a brat. She has like, there's that 80s brand of like Hardy Jens villain that like, if you have to make the villain really rich so that there's like cool, expensive shit to look at in the movie, but then you're never really on their side.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, from this distance, like, you feel sorry for her, or I do. Not to mention that she's still living with her dad and going to high school, and she's clearly 29 years old, but besides that.
Yeah.
She's fine. I mean, she's good. She's perfect at this.
Right. I mean, the thing, what she does is, like, she basically snitches on Janie. She calls the house posing as a nun. And snitches on Janie for sneaking out to practice with Jeff. And so Lynn and Janie get her back by ruining what they call her debutante ball, which is like like the cheapest, shittiest looking debutante ball I've ever seen. Oof, I assume it was written into the script. And then someone was like, oh, fuck, we didn't film that yet. And now we're out of money because it did not look good.
Well, and also they have like 16 million extras. So,
yes. But that I just is not a their revenge on her, I feel like, is not a proportional response. Because
I mean, like, it seems like something that Lynn would do.
Yes.
But then for Janie to be like that proud of it. But it does win Jeff over. So, yeah, I mean, it was a little much.
Yeah. She gets hers. Even her dad turns on her. That's the end of her storyline. So, you know, Jeff, very cute.
Mm-hmm.
The mullet is not his fault. It was the style at the time.
For the time, it was relatively restrained.
I thought so, too. Lee Montgomery had worked a lot. It looks like he, judging by his IMDb, he had started when he was like a really little kid. He did like some Columbos and a lot of stuff in the 70s. So he was like the Joey Lawrence of his day. And my guess is that he aged out of the business because he was replaced by Joey Lawrence, because they look a lot alike.
They do. He, I mean, he's definitely, he would be my preference, or was at the time. But yeah, like it's a very similar vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not a great actor. He's an okay dancer. Like you said, the doubling is for both him and Sarah Jessica Parker. It's like in full effect and very obvious. But yeah, it's a face that's made to be the non-threatening male lead of a teen movie, for sure.
Yes.
And I love the whole Stern Dad Chicago trade school thing. It's very Some Kind of Wonderful.
Uh-huh. I had that in my notes. But I also love that this, like, usually the trope is, like, this is the trope.
Yeah.
But I also love that there's not a lot of, like, mid-80s homophobic garbage about the dancing. Like, his dad is on board with the dancing. He just wants it to, like, you know, this is going to show some results or end. Like, that's fine.
Sure.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, all tied up in anyone's masculinity and stuff like that. Like, their whole family vibe felt really natural and atypical, actually, of that. Like, it wasn't as sitcom-y as that usually is in movies like this.
Yeah, I agree. I did wonder if Drew was his only friend, because I don't think we ever see Jeff talking to another boy, except when the guys at school are ranking on him. Again, not for homophobic reasons, but for getting paired with a girl from a Catholic school.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Because he's like, he sort of is like, he's written as a cool guy and like he reads as a cool guy, but then he doesn't have like cool guy friends. It's strange. Like they just, that seems like a piece that they left out. But anyway.
Yeah, true.
Speaking of Drew, please play clip one.
I hate it when you're in a bad mood.
I'm not in a bad mood.
What is going on? That's Drew and Jeff. Like, what is Drew? Think that they're dating, because that's not clear to me.
And then there is an extremely dramatic, like he sort of throws himself halfway into his own locker, and I was like, oh, he's doing a bit. It's not a bit.
Yeah,
they're like fighting like a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird.
You needed another take, but it's this movie, you're not getting it
right. All right, so let's move on to Drew. He is constantly hustling, trying to sell shit. He sells bootleg dance TV t-shirts. He sells term papers at school. It's not my place to say he's maybe an anti-Semitic stereotype, but it seems like maybe on the line of problematic, possibly.
Yeah, I don't think. And then there's the Tune in Tokyo incident.
Yeah.
I thought that was from a completely different movie, and I was dismayed to find that it was in this one. I thought it was from, like, not Brighton Beach Memoirs, the other one.
Oh, so, right. Yeah. Biloxi Blues?
Yes.
Radio Days?
Whichever one he was in and Broderick was not.
Radio Days.
Yes.
I think. Whatever. Yeah. And it went on for so long for, like, what the gag was, really.
Yeah.
That took its time.
Yeah.
All right, like Lynn.
We know the sexual assault is coming. Can you just...
Right.
Can we not?
I mean, maybe the teen girls don't, and this is like a lesson where if like a guy tries this with you, do not fall for it, in which case, you know what? I'll allow it.
She got a pretty good shot in too, at least.
She did. Okay, Lynn, truly a queen. It upsets me to think we as a culture have forgotten her and her iconic looks, because they were tens across the board.
Yes, everything. The like the hair alone.
Mm-hmm.
Like she has one like... I forget if this was like the dinosaur thing. I think it wasn't, but she's wearing like this long V-neck shaker knit. Like it's belted. There's neon colors. Her high tops are on point, and she has like the whatever airplane side hair clips. I also do not understand why the reversible kilt to leather mini look was not A, made available widely at Mandy's at the time, and B, has not been made available since. Universe, provide. Someone send me a link on Etsy. If it has pockets, I'm moving in with whoever made it. the shit is amazing. She always just looks so cool, but she's like, I enjoy also about this movie that she just like is who she is and mm-hmm. is semi paying attention when Janie first shows up, but then is like, that girl needs a friend.
Yeah.
We should be friends. And then they're just friends.
Yep.
And Lynn is cool without being like cool TM. She's great.
Yes, totally. Yeah. Secretly Steffi on Twitter, who I follow, we are MUFOs on Twitter. Her avatar, since we've been following each other, is Lynn doing side eye to Natalie at the auditions with the beret with the huge grasshopper on it. And it's like, yeah, I get it.
Oh my God. Yes. So like everything. Mm-hmm. I took a bunch of screen grabs so that I can find these
for
things.
Inspiration. But yeah.
Listeners, I'm not joking about the reversible mini, because even with the like kilt peeking out of the bottom, it's mm-hmm. the fucking cutest.
It's really cute.
So ska. She's the best.
Yeah. Love her iconic laissez-faire attitude as a babysitter. The number of shots we get of the baby just sitting in the middle of the pizza.
Like, yeah. It's like, look, the baby's happy. Is the baby crying? No.
The baby's fine. Yeah. I think cool without being cool TM is a perfect way to put it. I love how resourceful she is in helping Janie achieve her goals, like creating a diversion so that Janie can sneak out of choir. And for the movie's happy ending for her to be that she's the new Ricky on the show, the like MTV News anchor of dance TV, is such a great payoff, coming in a chariot with the, you know, the silver lame outfit. Gorgeous. I do wish the movie had made room for her to have had a storyline of her own, not even a love interest, just like more to do than just be Janie's sidekick, because she's so great.
Yeah.
So my headcanon for her is that she's queer and was having gay adventures every time she was off screen.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, but I do love their friendship. Dave, please play clip two.
What's the matter? Oh, I know. You're going to miss the beginning of dance TV.
Yeah, well, never mind. I'm used to missing things.
Well, get over it. I'm not going to let you miss anything.
Like, that's such a simple line, and yet it's the friend. That's the friend that you want, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I also love this. Dave, play clip three.
Lynn, I can't. They won't let me go.
Do you do everything you're told? Oh, God, you do.
As a Janie, yeah. I felt that.
God, me too. I think this is one of the things that resonated for me when I watched it as a kid, that it was like, what I need is a Lynn.
Totally.
It's like too many Janies spoil the fun.
Yep. 100%. All right. Janie, kind of a nothing character. She gets her good moments and she gets the story where it needs to go. I would say Janie walked so that Baby Houseman could run from Dirty Dancing.
Uh-huh.
Or could mambo is more the better way to put it, probably. And yeah, I also had here at this point in my notes, the distance the camera has to pull back for her and Jeff's dancing doubles is hilarious. It's totally a, you know, how about Cleveland moment.
Yeah. Totally. Although when they are like doing their learning montages, which means that those actors can just like be in a medium shot and fuck mm-hmm. up.
Yeah.
In like the last montage, she has that long sleeve leotard with like the watercolor flower on it.
Mm-hmm.
I still love that leotard. And like Sarah Jessica Parker's butt is just perfect. It should be in the Smithsonian.
Yeah, she looks also incredible in this movie.
She does have many charming, like the first time that she's mortified in front of Jeff, it felt absolutely like documentary mortification.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they kiss and she's like, bye. I mean, bye. Okay, bye. And then like rushes inside. And then there's like the bit with the Doberman, which is like sort of annoying. But then the Doberman is like at all these key moments of her life.
Yeah.
Like, I agree that it's sort of a nothing character, but I think that she has enough, like she walks the line of like, this is sort of a nerdy, intense character who needs help. Like breaking out of her shell and realizing her dreams, but she does put a little bit of a Daffy SJP stamp on it that has meant that I have forgiven SJP a lot of things in the interim, perhaps too many.
Yeah, she has a little bit of an edge to her. Like, after the auditions, when they're leaving, Jeff asks for her number, and she just is like, nah. Like, she's very sassy in a way that's, like, she isn't meek, despite being a Catholic school girl and despite everything we've seen of her to that point. Like, she has moments of security that I think make her more interesting to him and to the viewer.
Yeah, I agree.
But seriously, what is with that moment where she is just standing around in her underwear for so long? It's really weird.
Yeah. It's not great.
All right. I have a few stray notes before we get to Shannon Doherty as Maggie. That's the legendary Richard Blade as DTV host Gary Woods.
Uh-huh. We stand.
Every single goddamn DTV dancer has a perm.
Every single one.
Every guy, every girl. One of them is future Pussycat Dolls founder Robin Anton. Just a little bit of trivia there. I loved Lynn bragging about her babysitting client having a 25-inch TV. I think the monitor that David has here is like that size.
Yeah. I had a feeling you would clock that.
This is a clip, a line I had forgotten was from this movie. Play clip four.
Well, we're almost out of time, but tune in tomorrow for a sneak preview of seven more songs titled Jump.
Hey, quit biting mustache shit.
That's just good. Natalie has a remote control closet with like a rolling rack, like at a dry cleaners, mm-hmm. which I think the same thing in Clueless was probably an homage to that.
I certainly hope it was, but yeah, still stan that, and that she'll wear a leotard with nude hose and like knee high high heeled white scrunch boots.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of whether they ran out of money before they had to shoot the quote debutante ball unquote, I also wonder if they ran out of money for the exterior at Janie's, because it makes no sense that one of their neighbors in an apartment building would keep their Doberman chained up in like the front yard at an apartment.
Yeah. Why do they have an apartment?
It
Why
is
do they
weird
even
that
live
they
in
have
town?
An, yeah. Yeah.
It's yes. so that's very weird.
It is cute though that Annie alumna Sarah Jessica Parker guesses that its name might be Sandy. I liked that.
That was cute. I'd also like to know why Natalie's entrance music into her ill-starred debutante ball is Hail to the Chief.
Yeah.
You can't. No, it's not. That's not a thing that you do. Like, I get the joke, but still no.
Mm-hmm. If I ever meet Amy Spies, I would like to hear the story of why the exhausted PA at the auditions is in a Brandeis sweatshirt. I mean, I assume that she's an alumna, but I love that touch. It was tells yeah. a lot about the character. And one of the moments that suggests some wit and thought maybe were cut out that could have made this like push this over to the top from being like a very good 80s teen movie to being like maybe more of like it's the Bring It On of its time.
Right.
This one, clip five.
Get on.
I don't know. Are you sure it's safe?
It's the safest thing you'll ever have between your legs.
What?
Nothing.
She's not sure she should get on Jeff's motorcycle.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow, that's quite racy and yet tame. And that's very clever. You know, there's.
Uh-huh.
I felt like that was one of the lines that showed, you know, the writer's mind at work.
Yeah.
All right. We've put it off long enough. Let's talk about Maggie. So Shannon Doherty had just turned 14 when the movie came out. So let's say, you know, she was 12 or 13 when they were filming it, probably. And Maggie is probably then supposed to be in late middle school. They don't saddle her with a bunch of cloying kid sister shit to do, which I was kind of expecting. Like, Jeff is annoyed by her. She's annoyed by him. Like, she's not wise beyond her years. Like, they just seem like siblings.
Yeah. Yeah. And there wasn't a whole drama made. Maybe this got cut out so they could get that trim runtime in and play it a bunch more times in the theater. But she, like, the mom is not present, and that isn't a whole, like, sort of walking wound for the
yes.
family.
Yes.
It just is. And it's like, okay, is this perhaps a little more common in this kind of teen drama film? Yes, it is. But they're just like doing their chores and doing mm-hmm. their thing, and they know each other, and there's not a whole lot of tiresome exposition about expectations for the future.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, there's a glancing reference to their mother having died before she could tell her about, you know, grown-up women stuff. But then, you know, there's no reason for her to just get her period in the course of the movie or something. Like,
right.
You know, she just wants to be included in the cool stuff that the older kids are doing in a way that I think is, you know, believable and relatable.
And she also, like, makes that happen, and they
yes.
accept it on those terms.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think the most endearing note the movie gives her is that when she sees Janie and Lynn at the ball, she recognizes them from the auditions that she also, like, mooched her way into. Uh-huh. She's, like, psyched, and she wants to hang out with them, and they fully just jump her in on their wacky scheme
yes.
to ruin Natalie's dumb party. They're like, yeah, all right. Like, I love that for all of them.
Yeah.
It's cute.
But there's not a whole lot. I mean, I'm not sure how, like, realistic that would have been, but it mm-hmm. felt genuine to these characters.
For sure. Yeah. It feels true that these are the kinds of girls that she would idolize, whether mm-hmm. Jeff had been entangled with Janie or not. And yeah, she gets a cute moment where their dad, her and Jeff's dad, is lecturing Jeff about trade school or whatever. And she's mouthing along with it because it's something they've heard so many times. And then they give her the most iconic line of the movie. It's our final clip.
That's not funny.
Don't throw a mental, Dad.
Yeah.
Don't throw a mental, Dad.
Don't throw a mental, Dad. Yeah, this was, I'm so glad you picked this, because I also have seen Heather's a bunch, probably not as many times as you, but I also hadn't seen this since, God, undergrad probably. So it had been at least, oh my God, it has been probably 30 years for me too. Jesus.
No.
So this was super fun to revisit, especially since I'm such a fan of dance movies, and to see when the tropes were young and new and fresh being performed by these actors. It really was a treat. So,
there's
a delight.
There's really something to, like, I mean, she has her, like, all original everything. This mm-hmm. is her original, like, factory line teeth and yep. hair color. And she's yep. wearing, like, purple jeans, which, like, mm-hmm. yeah, like lavender jeans. Totally. This film fashion-wise is so on point, like, no wonder they ran out of money, but if that's why,
yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Yep.
It just has, like, such a good heart, and it stays within itself, but it's like, this is a dance movie with a love story. We're not going to try to do too much, and they don't, but what mm-hmm. they do is really charming, and
yep.
Shannon Doherty is actually a big part of that someone who wrote this and someone who was directing this actually had an ear for how teens and preteens, like, are in the world with each other. So
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah. I feel like it was destined that Amy Spies and Shannon Doherty would work together again in another iconic project that has brought us all so much joy. So God bless this movie for bringing them together. And God Indeed. Bless you for picking it.
Oh, thank you. I'll take that W.